If the representation of reality in this article is correct, the highest and best use of a dollar of debt may simply be to buy Bitcoin. The Best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, FOMO sexuals? We have a Bitcoin price of $45,000 today. Institutions are onboarding daily. Elon Musk is stacking sats. CNBC is getting nervous. Iran is legitimizing Bitcoin in an effort to get around capital controls. Michael Saylor is spreading the good word of Satoshi. We are officially beginning chapter 2 of Bitcoin, and I and Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. So, not really much going on right now in Bitcoin. Kind of boring, to be honest. But I wanted to savor a little moment here. For everyone who's already bought Bitcoin, just take a moment and enjoy the fact that you are front-running the richest man in the world with your Bitcoin investment. Feels kind of nice, doesn't it? Okay, enough of that. Let's stay humble. We got an awesome article today from Bitcoin Magazine. I think it's our first from Croesus on the show, if I'm not mistaken. But you should definitely be following him on Twitter. It's like Croesus_BTC, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe it's two underscores. Croesus is Croesus. But definitely a must follow. He's numerous great articles on like Citadel 21. In fact, I think he did Bitcoin in the American West. That's like a really good one. I don't have it in audio yet. Sorry, my bad. But today we are reading his article on Bitcoin Magazine, Asset DNA, Explaining Bitcoin's Speculative Attack on the Dollar. So we have audio of Pierre's quintessential piece on this, the speculative attack. And we've briefly talked about it elsewhere, but kind of with recent events, it seems like a good time to revisit and maybe dig a little bit deeper. Now, one caveat, this article's a little bit graphic heavy, but it's not super complicated. It's basically just a chart showing like over time, and it's got slanted lines for different asset types. So whether or not they're sloping down like really steeply, meaning they lose value very quickly, or they gradually slope down, like they slowly lose value, or they're actually sloping upward, they gain value over time. So I don't think it's like too bad to break it down. Just bear with me on that. Now, real quick, let's thank our two awesome sponsors. We've got the BitBox hardware wallet for secure cold storage. They just released a guide on how to roll dice to generate your own seed, which you can then put into your hardware wallet, which I just think is awesome. I think I'm going to reset my hardware wallet and actually just do it for fun. But if you want to check out their wallet and the blog, and you want to experiment with that and be a little bit nerdy, go to guyswan.com/bitbox. And then, of course, we have Bitcoin banking services and free exchange with level.co. You can direct deposit to this account. You got ACH, wire transfer, even checks, and a debit card, all while easily swapping between Bitcoin and dollars as you need to with no trading fees. That's kind of hard to beat. Check them out at guyswan.com/level. With that, let's get into today's article, and it's titled Asset DNA, Explaining Bitcoin's Speculative Attack on the Dollar by Croesus. Performance of Various Asset Types Over Time. Not all assets are created equal. Some appreciate in value, some lose value over time. This is obvious with things we consume, like the groceries we eat or the clothes we wear. But the same is true of assets that don't visibly deplete, but nevertheless lose value over time through wear and tear, like a car accumulating miles or a building without active maintenance. Less obvious is how assets that are not depleted by consumption or depreciated through use also vary in their performance over time. Traditionally, scarce assets like gold or land do a good job of maintaining their value and growing in relatively fixed proportions to the global economy. Ownership shares in successful companies typically generate additional yield by putting scarce capital to work. Ultimately, it's about the DNA of the asset. Its inherent properties dictate how the value of the asset will trend over time. If we put all of these different asset types into one image that characterizes their respective natures, it would look something like this. So we have a graphic here that he refers back to numerous times in this article, but we basically have value on the y-axis that starts actually right in the middle at 100%. When something is new, it's worth 100% of what it's worth. And then the x-axis, which is time. So something like a consumption asset, which he has a line on here, it falls extremely quickly on the time scale. So it goes straight from 100 and then just down to the right very, very quickly, because it's worth almost nothing either after it's used a few times or like if your food rots, if you don't eat it quickly. And then we have assets that are just depreciating assets. They take a lot longer, but they still just decline as time passes. These are examples like vehicles, buildings, equipment, etc. Then he has assets that actually grow. They actually are flat and or slightly increasing over time. Examples are gold, land, and some art or collectibles. And then finally, one that grow even a little bit more are assets like equities, which are both scarce assets and actually experience growth and productive returns. The link will be in the show notes so you can check out the graphics, but we'll be referring basically back to this same idea a few times in this article. Fiat currency, decay by design. This high-level image is missing something. Modern currencies. Gold was currency until not too long ago, only losing its link to paper currencies in 1971. Since 1971, we have been in a truly anomalous era of human history, a 50-year departure from the 75,000 years of documented use of hard money. For the first time ever, we are engaged in a monetary experiment where money is fiat currency, currency by decree alone, no asset backing whatsoever. Of greatest relevance to our focus, however, is the guiding principle at the heart of fiat currency, decay by design. Central bankers and governments believe it is best for the economy that you spend or invest your money, rather than store your earnings as savings, and they have designed the currency to lose 2% of its value per year in order to impose that assumption. As Paul Tudor Jones phrased it, "If you own cash in the world today, you know your central bank has an avowed goal of depreciating its value 2% per year." Quite simply, this math means that the dollar's value is designed to exponentially decay over time as a result of monetary inflation. And here we have the famous chart of the purchasing power of U.S. dollars over time, this one beginning at 1971, and it's just a slow downward sloping curve to 2020, and a dollar held since 1971 has only 15% of its original purchasing power in 2020. If we take this exponential decay trend and fit it into our logarithmic view of the various asset classes, we get something like this. And we're back to our original chart. And above depreciating assets that decline in value over a relatively long period of time, but below scarce assets that increase in value, like gold, land, and art and collectibles, we now have inflationary assets, like fiat currencies or airline miles, that decline much like depreciating assets, except on a slightly longer time frame. Bitcoin, the only thing they're making less of. The newest entrant into the set of global money competitors is Bitcoin. Bitcoin's performance over time is not linked with either global economic production or with a policy goal of losing 2% of value every year. Instead, Bitcoin's performance is linked to increasing scarcity, which is to say that its design is predicated on a simple mathematical concept of decreasing issuance over time. To borrow the common simplification of what gives land its value, quote, "is the only thing they're not making any more of," we can say this about Bitcoin. It's the only thing they're making less and less of. You might think it's better to own something that they're not making any more of rather than something that they're making less and less of. And indeed, it would not be inaccurate to say that land is a larger store of value asset than Bitcoin today because they are making less of it than they are of Bitcoin. But what matters more to individuals than what is the largest asset today is how the assets they hold will perform over time. To borrow Tudor Jones's words again, an investor's goal is to be on the fastest horse. When a great painter dies, the value of their existing work tends to shoot upwards. Why? Because investors are guaranteed that the painter will be producing less work. There will be no more newly added supply at all. As such, all market demand must bid for existing supply, and everyone knows it, causing willingness to pay to increase for a slice of the newly scarce body of work. At its core, this is the concrete economic advantage of Bitcoin. No other asset in history has leveraged math to deliver a credible guarantee of steadily reducing supply into the future. The simple reality of this is that Bitcoin's design gives it the scarcity of gold today, with the added rocket fuel of increasing scarcity that a famous painter's death lends to their life's work. Except that the supply shock happens every 4 years, so there's even stronger incentive for holders to keep holding through each successive halving. In short, increasing scarcity causes Bitcoin's value to go up exponentially over time. When we view Bitcoin's price history in linear terms, the trend is so dramatic that it's hard to make sense of. But by viewing this same data in logarithmic terms and tracking how price seems to jump upwards following each Bitcoin halving event, Plan B was able to come up with his compelling stock-to-flow model. This model suggests that the halvings themselves and the increase in scarcity that they cause by definition are at the heart of Bitcoin's exponential rise to date and ostensibly into the future. Rather than trying to explain this chart, I'll just say if you haven't gone and looked at the stock to flow chart of the Bitcoin price over time, it's a must and you just have to do it. Go to this article and or go look up Plan B on Twitter and you'll find it pretty quick. When we reduce the red line above into a simplified version for our big picture of asset types, we get something like this. And now we're back to our original chart of comparing depreciating inflationary scarce assets and equities, etc. And now we have Bitcoin, which is even significantly above equities because it is a scarce asset. It has increasing scarcity, and on top of all of that, it is experiencing early stage growth, making its value increase the steepest of all over time. Speculative attack, harnessing currency's diverging nature. The two types of modern currencies we've now looked at have very different DNA. The first, fiat currency, is designed to exponentially decay in purchasing power over time. The second, Bitcoin, is designed to exponentially appreciate in purchasing power over time. Looking at our chart again, we've removed all the other assets and we just have the dollar, which starts at 100 and decreases over time, and then Bitcoin, which starts at 100 and increases over time. So we have this divergence. The US dollar is declining down while Bitcoin is increasing upward. This ultra-simplified representation of the nature of the US dollar and Bitcoin also contains the implications of a world-changing economic reality. In 2014, Pierre Rochard penned Speculative Attack, in which he outlined how the diverging nature of the value of dollars and the value of Bitcoin over time creates fertile ground for bold individuals to borrow dollars in order to buy Bitcoin and repay that debt in the future. Now, this is the graphic that you really should go see because it's just such a great way to visualize this dynamic. I will explain it just because I like it. So we have essentially that same chart where the dollar is declining. They start at 100, and the dollar declines over time. So it's a downward sloping line. And then from that same point, we have the increasing Bitcoin value line, which is moving up. So basically, they make the letter K on the y-axis. But now there's a little bubble on both lines right at the base of the K, where their values are the same, and this represents the investment. There's a small bubble on the dollar, which is a debt, and then just above it, an equal-sized bubble on the Bitcoin line, which is the purchase of Bitcoin with that debt. We've borrowed dollars and moved that little bubble of value up to Bitcoin. And then we have the same chart after time has passed, and suddenly those bubbles look very different. The Bitcoin bubble has been traveling up the line and growing much larger in size, whereas the debt bubble has been falling down the dollar line and shrinking as it falls because the value of Bitcoin has grown over time and the value of the dollars that make up the debt have fallen over time. So now you can just take a little tiny piece of the large Bitcoin value bubble and pay off the dollar debt. Hopefully that comes across because I just think this is a really neat way to visualize this. But let's jump back in. Importantly, this is not a recommendation or a guarantee that the mechanics above will play out accordingly. However, if the logic in the earlier sections of this piece is sound, and the economic realities that underpin Bitcoin and the dollar deterministically set them on diverging paths into the future, the option is there. Indeed, that's what MicroStrategy has already acted on. In December 2020, having already deployed the public company's entire treasury into Bitcoin, MicroStrategy issued $650 million in convertible debt in order to purchase more Bitcoin. In an environment with dramatic dollar printing and investors desperate for any kind of yield, the terms of the deal were attractive to lenders, and MicroStrategy quickly secured the debt and deployed the funds, buying 29,646 Bitcoin at an average price of $21,925 per Bitcoin. 1 month later, MicroStrategy is up more than 50% on its speculative attack. If the mechanics described here are accurate, more individuals and entities will leverage the opportunity contained therein, not as a gamble, but as an informed strategic move to leverage the fundamentally different designs of the two currencies. The entire world faces a massive economic incentive to borrow dollars, buy Bitcoin, and settle the debt when a sufficient amount of time has passed that the value of the Bitcoin holdings and borrowed dollars have meaningfully diverged. Acting on this comes with considerable risk and requires that an individual or entity is prepared to service the debt they take on, either for the years before the purchasing power divergence manifests, or in the event of unexpected total disaster, for example, losing keys. That said, if the representation of reality in this article is correct, the highest and best use of a dollar of debt may simply be to buy Bitcoin. Many more individuals and entities will leverage this asymmetry for personal gain into the future. The logical conclusion of this trend is that eventually nobody will be willing to lend dollars when they can just buy Bitcoin with those dollars themselves. And once the world has reached that level of understanding of Bitcoin, it's game over. Fiat currencies simply cannot withstand the economic reality that Bitcoin imposes upon them. Bitcoin will continue appreciating while fiat currencies will continue decaying. It's in their DNA. All right. I want to talk quite a bit more about speculative attacks, and we will get to it in just a second. Let's hit our sponsor real quick, and we will jump back in. Now, if someone did do a speculative attack on the dollar, it would be even more important for them to hold their own keys on a secure hardware wallet. If they used a custodian, their account could be frozen or their funds could be confiscated when the government realizes that their Ponzi scheme is going up in smoke. But not if you're holding your Bitcoin on the BitBox O2 hardware wallet. It is a secure, open source cold storage device that keeps your Bitcoin safe and is easy to use. You don't have to log into their website to use the wallet. The interface for their software is stupid simple. The backup is really fast to a micro SD card that you can keep in your safe. And of course, you can write your seed words down on paper as well for added redundancy. If you're serious about Bitcoin savings, you need to get a really good hardware wallet, and you will find exactly that at guyswan.com/bitbox. All right, so I highly recommend going to the article and just looking at the graphic. I mean, I know it's kind of a simple idea, but I just kind of like the way it's visualized. And, you know, the dynamic of this, what's really crazy is that the only way that, well, let's use the dollar as an example, that the only way that they can actually prop up the current economic disaster that they have put themselves in is to accelerate the benefits of this attack. The only mechanism they have is to consistently lower interest rates or even go into the negative. And what's funny is that they actually have some semblance of that appearing to work as long as people don't have an exit, as long as there's no reliable, secure, appreciating asset that they can really put their money in. And the wealthy will always put it in, you know, real estate and equities and gold and these sorts of things. But what's funny is that these things are still within the financial system. So there, it's still not an exit. It is within that system. They're still able to easily tax, control, inflate the paper assets for a lot of these things. I mean, look at gold and silver, right? And we just kind of saw this with GameStop, is they're allowed to essentially short with paper assets that don't exist. Listen to Guys Take 41. 140% of the stock was shorted, which means that they were essentially selling shares that genuinely don't exist anywhere in the world. This is something that in that walled garden, they're allowed to control. They're allowed to manipulate, to essentially cook the books when shit goes against them. And Bitcoin basically screws with that entire plan. It is a way to walk outside of it, to literally stand outside and just look at the mess. And you can go in and you can borrow at their insane rates. And rather than it propping up their own system, it accelerates the decline because you can purchase an exit with that debt. And I love the term that Croesus uses in this, asset DNA. I think that's such a great way to put it, is that the very design, the core design of these things is that Bitcoin, with constant demand, think about it this way. If demand is unchanging, Bitcoin will appreciate in value and the dollar will fall in value if it doesn't change. But now add to that the feedback loop of an appreciating asset increasing in demand and a depreciating asset like inflationary currency decreasing in demand. So they accelerate on themselves. And then to also be in an environment, like we're in a horrible, horrible financial environment. I should not be able to easily borrow money right now. There is no savings anywhere. There is a surplus nowhere in the economy. Unemployment is still crap. Productivity is crap. GDP is crap. They're printing money like crazy. And yet I was just able to refinance. And a lot of people are doing this. In fact, the refinancing, I spoke with them and kind of asked them about the situation or whatever. And they said people are refinancing like crazy. And we pulled equity out of the house. This is a speculative attack, right? I mean, it's a tiny one in comparison to what Michael Saylor did by issuing a bond against their company. And I think that was at like 1.5%. People are so desperate for yield. I mean, it might have been like 1.7 or something, but it was low. It was an incredibly low interest rate for this bond. But people are so desperate for yield that that's a good deal. That's insane. That's absolutely insane. And it absolutely makes no sense that I should be able to refinance and get a lower interest rate and easily pull equity out of the house in this financial situation versus when I bought the house 3 years ago or whatever it was. I mean, no sense. No sense at all. It should absolutely be much more difficult. Interest rates should be much higher because we are in a far, far crappier financial situation overall. And yet, we were able to take equity out of the house and we had lower monthly obligations. We took money out of the house that we had been putting into it in remodeling, and our bills for the month, our mortgage went down by almost $200. That's like a cheat code. That makes absolutely, fundamentally no sense whatsoever in our financial environment, but I'm going to take advantage of it. If they're going to offer me a lower interest rate to pay off old debts, I mean, this is the cycle that we have done over and over again, and we're rushing to zero and negative interest rates in order to pull it off. And it's happening across the board. We are all taking out new debts to pay off old high interest debts. And the only reason that we can do this game can't last forever. The only end game here is a painful, slow, awful stagnation for a decade or more, something like that happened in Japan, if they literally just print their way and have the central bank essentially fuel all of the economic activity or basically buy up all the assets, or the currency dies. And I think, again, the reason Japan kind of got away with it, and this has been going on since the 90s, their financial situation has been insane. Their stock market never really crashed. I mean, if you look at it, they've managed to keep a stagnant, really terrible financial situation going on for a very long time. But again, I think it's because there's no exit, or there hasn't been an exit. Everybody's essentially trapped in this walled garden that they can manipulate, and they can cook the books at every possible avenue so that only a handful of people ever really can play the system well enough to get incredibly wealthy and basically shore themselves or hedge themselves against the fundamental breaking of the financial system. But everybody's still stuck in it. And for the first time, that's not the case. And I just love that line. Because, you know, from the context of the DNA of, like, on a long enough time frame, this is the outcome. A scarce and increasingly more scarce asset will only increase in value, and a inflationary depreciating asset will only go down in value. And if you can get that depreciating asset at an incredibly low interest rate that you can actually service, you can manage that debt over 2, 3, 4 years, over a long enough timeline, it makes no sense to do anything but buy appreciating assets. I mean, this is what the wealthy has been doing for ages. This is how they have gotten rich. This is the Cantillon effect. They get close, they get as close as they can to the spigot, so they get the lowest possible interest rates, and then they buy assets that go up in prices. They buy equities. They buy their own stock. They do stock buybacks, which pump up the value of their own holdings by buying more of their own stock, and they do it with debt. That's crazy. That's absolutely insane. But it's usually the further down the line you get, the further from the money spigot you get, the higher the interest rates. Like, the banks are getting a loan at 0.7%, you know, like 70 basis points. They're able to loan from the Federal Reserve and the Reserve banks and get dirt cheap loans. And then they loan it out to you at 20% on a freaking credit card. They're making bukus of money. They're just, the financial system is just soaking up all of the value and all of the assets by making a spread on money they essentially get for free. And the logical conclusion, if you can get low interest debt, if you can actually take advantage of it, we should be buying Bitcoin. Like, it's the best in regards to the appreciating asset. And as he puts on this little chart, the little visualization is that we've also got early stage growth. So we've got the demand feedback loop of an appreciating asset, and it's also a novel asset. It's being, its market is being built right now. It's being monetized. So it's not just that it's a money that appreciates over time, which it is. It's being monetized, which means that you're going to see exponentially greater increase in purchasing power over a long enough time frame. And I think what the average, I could be wrong, but I think it's like 0.7% a day is like the if you really stretch out the history of Bitcoin's appreciation, it's damn near 1% a day. That's insane. That's utterly insane. I mean, just this year, with Swan Bitcoin or whatever, they show one of the really cool things with, swanbitcoin.com/guy, by the way, if you're not auto stacking Bitcoin, what the hell, you're failing at Bitcoin. But I think I've saved, they show you like how much you've saved in dollars versus how much it's worth in Bitcoin. And just this year, doing like the $50 a week and like bumping it up a little bit, I've saved about $3,000 worth, and it's worth about $10,000. Who would possibly save any other way? And dollar cost averaging like that on an asset with that DNA, when the alternatives are horribly low interest rates on anything, you can't even come close to making up the interest rate on a savings account in dollars. I said this in one of the episodes. I can't even remember which one now. I think it was probably one of the guys' takes. I said that if you're saving, like as an investment, as a strict investment, if you have dollars in a savings account, in a bank, so that you can earn interest, you're stupid. Like, that's an absolutely horrific investment. I think I had $1,000 in one for a while, and I don't even remember why I had it there. I think it was just like my reserve, so that because, you know, I'm usually trying to get into Bitcoin as quick as possible, so I keep minimum in the bank, that anything that I'm willing to lose, essentially. You know, people say, make sure you don't put anything in Bitcoin unless it's an amount that you're willing to lose. I do the exact opposite. I don't leave anything in a bank unless it's an amount I'm willing to lose. And so I think I had like the savings. We had like $1,000 in quote unquote the reserve account, just so that we didn't overdraft if, you know, something hit, like bills or whatever, because we have everything on auto pay to A, save money, and B, not have to worry about it. But I remember I got we got like a check for like, what was it, like 80 cent or something like that? I can't remember. It was stupid. I was just like, what the hell is this? And it took me a minute to realize, like, I went like looking, it's like, why do we have a check for like nothing? And then I went in and I realized it was our interest payment. It was the amount of money that we were earning, quote unquote, on our savings. And even if you believe the BS CPI, which is complete crap, if you use the CPI before they changed it like three times to constantly make it less and less, just their standards from the 80s that I still kind of think are completely below the mark. But let's take the assumption that in the 80s they were at least honest about inflation, and then to lower their liabilities over the past, you know, 40 years, they've cheated it down two times, I think, maybe three times, I can't remember. But even if you just take the standard from the 80s, inflation is about like 6-8% this year. But I still much more of a fan of the Chapwood Index, which there is a mirror of it. Right now, the Chapwood Index is actually down, but you can get it on chapwoodindex.org if you want to check that out. But regardless, CPI is a horrible, horrible inflation measure. But even if it was the accurate inflation measure, I was getting like 15 basis points, like 0.15%. So even if CPI is only like 2%, I'm losing 1.85% per year by having it in savings. Almost everywhere, you get nothing but a guaranteed loss when you are dealing in fiat. It is just a horrible, horrible measurement. It is a horrible investment, and it is a horrible place to park value for any length of time. If you are measuring and or planning your retirement in dollars, you are making a huge mistake. This reminds me actually of a tweet. In fact, I probably can find it really quick. I think I saved this one. It was by Gary Leland. He's the guy who runs BitBlock Boom. If you don't know, he's the Bitcoin boomer. Has a couple of podcasts and like shows and stuff that he does, as well as doing the BitBlock Boom conference. It's like Crypto Cousins, which I've been on and hung out with him a couple of times. And what's the other one? It's like 4 Minute Bitcoin, I think. You should be following Gary Leland. He is the Bitcoin boomer. But when he has a tweet, yeah, I got it right here. So he says, when I was a kid, a Coke was 6 cents, movies were 35 cents, and candy bars were 5 cents. Do your own math and calculate how much these items will cost in 55 years if inflation only remains the same. Now, 55 years, this is the retirement time frame. So if you're saving money, you're expecting, you're going to be framing it in the context of what the prices are, like the prices are today. And the amount of money that has been created just this year, or I guess this past year alone, has been astronomical. There is no way we will see the same inflation towards the end of the dollar. Hell, we don't even know if I legitimately don't believe it will survive 55 years without a doubt. Like, it's gone before then. That right there is enough of reason to never plan for your retirement in dollars. But just think about it in Gary's perspective, if he was saving money. So I retweeted it. I did the math. He said, do the math on how much these items will cost in 55 years if it only stays the same. So I did the math and said that if it roughly stayed the same, there were actually variants to the price of a Coke and movie and stuff because they haven't been exactly the same. But it said to get a Coke would be $72. A movie ticket would cost $540, and a candy bar would be $58. And I said, but I bet we hit those prices before 2030. Now, this is the kicker right here. Over that time frame, how much are you being stolen from? How much are you truly being robbed? Imagine you saved $5,400 today for retirement. And when that time came, you could only buy 10 movie tickets with it. And this is considered normal. Now think about it the other way. Think about it in the context of a speculative attack on the dollar, and you're holding Bitcoin. Let's say Bitcoin stays exactly the same in value relative to dollars. So the dollar price goes up, but only to the degree, like let's say on that chart or whatever, the Bitcoin line is just flat, right? I don't see any way, it doesn't make any sense from the context of its asset DNA that that's going to be the case. But let's just say it does nothing but keep its value while dollars decline roughly this amount. That means that if you took out $5,400 in a loan and bought Bitcoin and paid it off in 55 years, it would only cost the equivalent work of 10 movie tickets in order to pay it off. And you would still have your original purchasing power. And again, that's if Bitcoin does nothing but stay consistent in value. If it just keeps going up exponentially like it has been for the whole time that Bitcoin's been around, Well, then that being able to pay that off is ridiculously easy. I mean, just look at it. Go back 6 months. 6 months ago, we were at $8,000, $9,000. If you've taken $20,000 out of a mortgage, you know, out of the equity in your house or something, and, you know, you're getting 2%, you're getting 2% rates or 3%, and which that's a yearly rate. That's an annualized rate. So at 3%, $20,000, that's what, $400 a year? Like, that's what it's costing you? So you took out that $20,000, you bought two Bitcoin at $10,000, and now just 6 months later, you have $95,000. It's cost you $200 to get that, and you have two full Bitcoin, and you can sell 0.2 Bitcoin, 0.21 Bitcoin, something like that, and pay it off. And you're sitting on 1.79 Bitcoin. Now, obviously, that's not going to always happen. Like, this is a pretty epic 6 months in Bitcoin. And just like he says in this article, is that there's a big risk there, because it's obviously done the exact opposite over a 6 month period. You go back to 2017, if you'd done it at 20,000, then it falls to 3, you're in the exact opposite scenario. And so there's always the risk. But if you can service the $400 a year debt at these stupid low interest rates, you just hold. You just hold and let the asset DNA do its work. You know, disclaimer on this is not financial advice. I'm just giving an example here. And, you know, debt is a disease one way or the other, and you do not want to get yourself stuck in something that you can't afford, particularly if you end up underwater. So, you know, take all of this like as a grain of salt. I'm not promoting this as an option, but, you know, do the math. Think about it. Does it make sense in your situation? Because there is a very unique opportunity here. If you can afford to take the risk and you understand what the risks are, like in my current situation doing this exact thing, I'm fully aware, like if it goes down, like if it falls back down to $10,000, I'm fine. I'm absolutely fine. It's not going to bother me a bit. In fact, I might try to do it again, but everybody's risk tolerance is different. Everybody's situation is different. But the point is, this is going to steamroll. And I don't see any way that interest rates can be risen without a massive economic fallout. I mean, the little bit that they tried to unravel with slightly higher interest rates back in like 2015, 16, and 17, they immediately had to turn it around. Like just the tiniest interest rates. I can't even remember what it was. It went up like 100 basis points over a period of like 3 or 4 years, and it was a disaster. They immediately had to knock interest rates back down because suddenly the cracks were forming. Like, there's no way out of this. They're either going to print themselves into oblivion, or they lower interest rates until essentially the gig is up. This is why Bitcoin exists. This is the fundamental top value case that this system can provide, is an exit to the legacy walled garden that is constantly robbing us to keep this thing afloat. And as large institutions realize they can do this, like as people near the money spigot, as the Cantillons, like can get really low interest rates, as, you know, MicroStrategy can issue their own bonds and do this, you know, like, as I said, you go back to the series, gradually then suddenly, this compounds on itself very, very quickly. And I've said for a very long time, 2021 is going to be a psychotic year. It's going to be crazy. This is, we're in February. Look at what's happened so far in 2021. So, you know, as I say on damn near every show now, buckle your seatbelts. Because it's going to be a wild ride. The game is already changed. And now we get to see what happens when new plays start getting executed. So, anyway, great article from Croesus. Bitcoin Magazine, as usual. Don't forget to check out the actual article so you can see the graphics and other data and stuff related to this. Good to have visuals. And check out all of the Bitcoin Magazine articles that I do not have time to do in audio because they have been absolute fire lately. And of course, check out our wonderful sponsors, Level.co for mobile banking services. They are available in mobile Bitcoin banking services, and a no trading fee exchange. They're available in 28 states and more to come. And then, of course, the BitBox hardware wallet, the BitBox O2, secure open source cold storage for your Bitcoin savings. And please save in Bitcoin. Do not save in dollars. It's just a bad financial decision. But if you want to make a great financial decision, you can subscribe to Bitcoin Audible. And that's just a no-brainer. That's essentially an infinite return on investment because it's free. But you can also join the Audionauts in our Telegram group by just donating $1, either becoming a patron or donating a little bit on the website at guyswan.com. Support the show. That's the only barrier that I have for getting into the Audionauts. I just want to make sure we don't get overrun with trolls and, you know, shitcoin promoters. Join the Audionauts. Become one of the anointed and hang out with the crew in our Telegram chat. We have a lot of fun over there. And so much thank you to the people who have supported me. For a whole freaking year, it was only the patrons and the Audionauts who were keeping this show running and keeping my coffee cup filled. So thank you all so much for having stuck with me for so long and for listening to the show and for sharing it out with everybody you know. I love you all. Thank you so much. We will be back here tomorrow with another episode. I am Guy Swan. And until then, everybody, take it easy, guys. This has been a 111 production of Bitcoin Audible, and you were listening to it on the Let's Talk Bitcoin Network.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.